Okay, good afternoon, everyone. We are Parshas Naso. So last week we had the chance to celebrate Shavuos together. We're going to pick up with Parshas Shavuos. I want to share with you, really, there's one idea which I found manifests itself in two different places in our Parsha. It's a magnificent idea, I think, and I'd like to share them with you. It's a little complicated, but I believe that it is worth it. What you have in front of you on your screen, which I hope that you can all see in a clear way. Oh, yeah, there it is. You might need to minimize the pictures in the corner if you want to see the entire screen. You have here a small chart, a basic chart, of the three families of Levi, as the Torah describes in this week's Parsha, as they would carry the Mishkan, with the tabernacle, when they would move from place to place. The Jews spent 40 years in the desert, as you know. Over the course of those 40 years, they traveled to at least 42 different places. And every time, they needed to disassemble the Mishkan and then reassemble it when they got to their new location. And the Torah describes in the beginning of our Parsha, Parshas Naso, who did what job as far as this disassembly and reassembly would go. It actually began a little bit in last week's Parsha. One of the three families was described at the end of Parshas Bamidbar, but two of them are the opening of this week's Parsha, Parshas Naso. So just a brief historical background. If you see in front of you the screen, you have the three families. You could follow my pointer over here. Kehath, Gershon, and Merari. Now these are the three sons of Levi. Levi and his actual children have died a long time ago, because Levi himself was one of the 12 children of Yaakov who went down to Mitzrayim. And then we have 210 years of servitude. So these, the people, the families, these are the tribal families of Kehath, Gershon, and Merari. They are, I gave you their numbers underneath, it's not really relevant, but this is how many people, how many children are in this entire family as they were counted in last week's Parsha. They were counted from the age of 1 month and up. So there were, for example, 8,600 members of the family of Kehath, 7,500 members of the family of Gershon, and 6,200 members of the family of Merari, for a total of about 22,000 in Levi as a whole. Again, they were counted from 1 month and up, so it's a larger account. That is far less of a total than all the other tribes. The fact that the entire tribe of Levi is only about 22,000, and it's a much larger count. And many commentators describe why that should be, that Levi seemed to have multiplied far less than all of the other tribes. A lot of them tied into the fact that Levi was mostly spared from the servitude of Mitzrayim. And the Torah explicitly says, according to the difficulties that the Jewish people had, Hashem blessed them with more and more children, and the tribe of Levi ended up with significantly less. Either way, be it as it may, the tribe of Levi is subdivided into its three main families, each one for the children of Levi. And that's what we have in front of us. The Torah then tells us that each one of these three families was then given a specific task when it came to carrying the Mishkan from one place to another as they would go through their stops in the desert. In last week's Parsha, we learned in Parshas Bamidbar, we learned about the first family, the family of Kehath, and that is the leftmost column, as you see in the screen in front of you. And they had the most sanctified of all of the tasks. Their task was the actual kelim, the sacred vessels of the Mishkan itself. That's what they were in charge of carrying. They had to therefore take the Aron, the actual ark, which housed the Shtei Luchot with the two tablets inside. They would carry the menorah, the Shulchan Mizbeach HaZahav, which was the golden altar, the Shulchan, the table, which had the showbread, the 12 loaves of bread on it. All of the sacred vessels, they were in charge of carrying. What I want to do is I want to show you a picture just briefly for a moment. Hello, everyone. You can probably see me now again. I'm going to tell me if this works. I hope it will. I am going to show you this. I'm going to actually, let me see myself so that I can see exactly. Yeah. Okay. This is a picture of the Mishkan. What you see, I hope that's clear, you see the outer walls. Right in front, you see the outside altar. This was a very large Mizbeach. And here is the actual, what was known as the Ohel Moed, the Tent of Meeting. Inside of the Tent of Meeting housed all of the sacred vessels. That's where you would find the menorah, that's where you would find the shulchan, that's where you would find the aron. All of that was inside here, and there were various skin coverings draped atop. They were very ornately designed and woven. The Gemara describes the great wisdom the women had in being able to weave all of those coverings. And this is the basic structure of the Mishkan. So the first family that we just mentioned, the family of Kehas, they were in charge of the most sanctified vessels, those which were actually kept inside the Mishkan. The second family that we're going to do, I'm just going to hold this up once, and we'll do all of them, and then we'll run through it again in a moment. They actually carried the Ohel Moed itself. All of those skins, all of those coverings, all of the things that were necessary for the Ohel Moed. And the third family carried all of the outside walls. So we went from highest level of Kedusha, sanctity, that which was inside the Ohel Moed, to the Ohel Moed itself, to the actual wall. So I hope that's just helpful in seeing exactly a little bit what's going on. Let's go back to our sheet. Okay. So, we did the family of Kehas. They were the ones who had the most sanctified of all of the vessels, as we just learned. They had the sacred vessels, the Aron, the Menorah, the Golden Altar, and the Shulchan. And then we have, in this week's Pasha, we begin with the family of Gershon. They, about 7,500 members, not that that's so relevant, just wanted to see that. That family, by the way, each of these major families was then subdivided into their own families, because this Kehas himself had several children, which created several other lines, and they divided up who was in charge of what, which family within this family had the Aron, which family had the Menorah, and so on and so forth. Gershon, the second family, had the next level of sanctity. They had the Tent of Meeting itself, the curtains, the coverings. There was a screen at the entrance of the outer wall, and they also had the lace hangings of the outer wall. Along the actual outer wall, which were wooden planks, there were hangings over the outer wings to beautify them. So they took those hangings, those beautifications of that outer wall, they were in charge of that as well. So they had the actual Tent of Meeting, that next level of sanctity. Again, Kehas had the vessels within the Tent of Meeting. Gershon had the Tent of Meeting and all of those curtains and coverings, as well as the screen at the entrance. And then the third family, as described in our Parsha Merari, they had the actual structure, the planks, the bars, the pillars, the sockets, all of those things that we learned about when we went through the end of Sefer Shemot, all of the actual construction of the Mishkan, they carried all of those things. And so you see the descending order of sanctity from Kehas, the vessels, to the Tent of Meeting, to the actual outer walls and the pillars. One just interesting point, who was actually the oldest son? The oldest son was actually Gershon. He was the eldest. It was Gershon, Kehas, and then Merari. And yet, it's the son, it's Kehas who has the holiest and most sanctified task, and that is because from Kehas descended Aharon and Moshe themselves. Aaron and Moshe are descended from this family of Kehas, and even though they were not the oldest, they became the most important sub-family because of that of Aharon and Moshe, and they were therefore blessed with carrying the most sanctified of all of the vessels. Which again, for those who, if you were there at our Tanakh class, we went through, when we went through the five books of the Chumash, Tanakh Bishana, we highlighted a lot that one of the themes that runs through all of the Chumash is, we'll call it sibling rivalry, but this constant tension between the eldest and, not necessarily the youngest, but a younger child as to who really takes control. There seems to be a natural tendency towards the eldest. The eldest, of course, gets a double inheritance in Jewish law. There's an expectation that he will become the leader, he will become the Bechor, and the Bechor will serve. Originally, the Bechor was supposed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, but what ends up happening is the Bechor loses that, and it becomes Levi instead. And that tension between eldest and youngest runs throughout so many of the stories of Chumash, as to it's not always the oldest who plays that role. Yosef, of course, has that issue. Yaakov is younger than his brother Esav. Rachel is younger than her sister Leah. There are numerous instances where there's that rivalry and tension, and it is not always the eldest who rises to the top. A lot of times it's based on merit and various other factors. And here's just one, isn't it? Just a side note that the children of Kehas, who is not the eldest, take this particular role. Parenthetically, this plays itself in the rebellion that Korach is going to have. We'll read about it in a few weeks. Also comes about where he sort of assumed, because of his birth order, that he should have had a more prominent role than the one that he had. But we'll get to that all in the right time. One other side point to our main topic, but very relevant, it's actually in our Parsha as well, is how did they actually carry all of these items? This was quite a major task. So the Torah actually describes, and it's in our Parsha, let's actually read this inside. And I'm going to get that up on your screen in front of you. Ooh, not sure if I'll be able to. Let's see if I... Here it is. Yes. Okay. Let me just get the right... There we go. So the Torah describes, which I would like to share. Here they are. Okay, from the beginning of chapter 7. Vayi biyom kalos Moshe lakimis ha-mishkan. On the day that Moshe completed setting up the Mishkan, we're going to get back to this pasuk a little bit later, and they consecrated it, and everything was ready to go. The leaders, the tribal leaders, each one of the 12 tribal leaders came forward with a... with an offering, and the rest of the parasha is going to describe how each one of the tribal leaders brought an inaugural offering here on the first day that the Mishkan was ready to function. Together with their offering, they brought something else, and that's described here in the pasuk Gimel, the third pasuk. We've described this at great length in other past years. We're just going to highlight one point at this time. Vayaviu es karbonam lefnei Hashem. They brought their offering before Hashem. Shesh eglos tzav ushnei asar bakar. They brought 6 covered wagons and 12 oxen, meaning that so each wagon needed 2 oxen to pull it. So they brought a total of 6 wagons and 12 oxen to be able to pull it, so that 2 tribes got together and they would each contribute 1 bull, and together between the 2 of them, 1 wagon. And they brought this before the Mishkan. They brought these wagons and the oxen to pull them to the Mishkan. And then, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Hashem speaks to Moshe. We're like, there's like a missing part of the story. They bring them there. We don't know what happens to them. And then Hashem speaks to Moshe. And he says, Kach me'itam, take them. Now, why would Hashem need to say to Moshe, take them? So Rashi points out, well, obviously, Moshe didn't want to take them. Moshe said, he looked at his clipboard of all of the utensils and all of the materials and all of the things that were needed for the building of the Mishkan. And today is the final day. It's been fully constructed. We're ready to start. It doesn't say on my list that we need wagons. There's nothing here about that. So Hashem has to, he rejects them, the offering from the leaders. He says, we don't need this. And Hashem says to him, no, kach meitam, take them, vayula avodas avodas oel moed, and they will serve, venasato samel halavim ish kefiel. You're going to give them to the Levim. Meaning the tribal leaders, chapt, on their own. How are the Levim going to schlep everything? This is going to be quite a task. So they contributed the wagons. They brought the wagons and they said to Moshe, we'd like to offer this to the Levim to help them bring all of these heavy planks and sockets and coverings. It's a big deal. We're going to give you the wagons. Now, you could do the math. If you have a total of 6 wagons and 3 different Levim families, how should Moshe have divided the wagons amongst the families? So obviously, it should have been 2 wagons per Levi tribe in order to be able to do so. Look at what Moshe actually does. Vayikach and Pasuk Vav 6 in front of you. Vayikach Moshe sa'agalot v'yasabakar. Vayiteno samel ha'levim. So Moshe took these wagons and carts and he gave them to the Levim. Eshtei ha'agalos, 2 of the carts, he gave to the B'nai Gershon. B'nai Gershon, again, was our middle family. They had the coverings of the actual Ohel Moed. So two of the wagons went to Gershon, and then Pasuk Chet, verse 8, v'et arba ha'agolos, and then the four remaining wagons, together with their eight oxen, he gave to B'nai Merari. He gave to the third of our families, who needed to take the actual outer walls, all of those planks and sockets and bars, that went to them. So the six wagons were divided, two to the family of Gershon for the Ohel Moed, the actual tent and its coverings. Four of the wagons went to the third family of Merari to schlep the outer walls. You ask the obvious question, well, what in the world happened to the first family of Kehas? They're the most sanctified. They have the vessels themselves. So the Torah itself answers that question, knowing that you're going to answer that. Verse 9 in front of you, Levnei Kehas, to that first family of Kehas, lo nasan. He didn't give any. Ki avodas hakodesh aleihem, because they are carrying the most sanctified of the objects. Bikotef yiso'o, they will carry that on their shoulders. They're not allowed to have any wagons. The menorah, the aron, the shulchan, those vessels are so sanctified, you can't load them into the trunk. You don't just put them in the wagon and have an ox carry it. No! That needs to be carried right here. That's so sanctified, so special, they don't get any because they're the ones that have to carry that themselves because of the sanctity of what it is that they are carrying. And so therefore we have our three families like we described. Kehas carries it on their shoulders, and then the next two families, Gershon, who had the Ohel Moed, and Merari, they got the wagons to take everything. I just want to parenthetically point out, we find this idea in one other place. I always like, you know, tying in the different ideas where we see when they come up in different places. If you recall from the story of the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim itself, when we left Mitzrayim, after we had made the very first Seder in history, all the Jews had to be in their houses, and we spoke about then how they were not allowed to leave. You brought the Korban Pesach, you roasted it whole, you put the blood on the doorpost and on the lintel above, and then Al Yetzei Ish Mi Pesach Beis, so no one was allowed to leave their house the whole night, until they were given the clearance. And what did they do inside their homes that night? They ate the Korban Pesach, and they ate it with a matzah and with maror. And then when the Torah says that the Egyptians came bounding on their doors and said, get out, it's time to leave, and they left Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh the next morning, the Torah says they gathered their leftovers, and they placed it al shechmam, they placed it on their shoulders. That's what the Torah says. They gathered their leftovers. Rashi says the leftover matzah that they had eaten at the special night of the Korban Pesach, and they placed it on their shoulders. And Rashi asks, who cares where they placed it? Why in the world does the Torah highlight where they placed their bags of leftovers? It's an irrelevant detail in the story. And Rashi says it's not an irrelevant detail in the story, because we know they had many, many donkeys that carried all of their things out of Mitzrayim. The Torah tells us they schlepped all of their goods out on the donkeys. They left to the desert. And Rashi says that's why it's important to note that they put the matzah on their shoulders, because it was so chaviv, it was so loved, so beloved and special to them, this mitzvah that they had to eat, the first Seder of Jewish history. They all said to themselves, you want me to just throw the matzah into the trunk? Along with my shmatas, and along with the all the other things, and the boots, and the thing, or the kids, just throw it in the trunk with the wagons? No way! This matzah, right here, it's coming with me, close to my heart, I'm carrying that, because that which is dear to us, that which is special, you don't just throw in the trunk and pack away, you carry that with you, because of its precious nature. And we see this exact same idea, not even so many years later. This is 1 year later in the desert, as the tribal Levi is divided into its three, the most sanctified of the tribes of Kehas. They do not get any wagons because they're carrying the most sacred, and as a result of carrying the most sacred, no wagons for them. They're going to carry that by hand. This now leads us to the actual main topic that I wanted to get to after all of that background. Back to our little chart here. All the families, each one of these three families, had a member of Aaron's two sons, one of Aaron's two sons in charge. so that there was, again, remember, there's a large family. There are 8,600 members of the family of Kehath and 7,500 in Gershon. Who's in charge? Who's in charge? So somebody was put in charge. Aharon, of course, originally had four sons. Two of his sons die. It's actually on this day that they die by bringing an offering that was not required. There are a lot of things happen on this one day. And now he has two sons left, Elazar and Itamar. Now, again, doing a little bit of basic math, we have a very basic problem because we have two sons of Aharon who are going to be appointed in charge of the various tribes of Levi to make sure that everything is done well. You need somebody in charge to make sure it's done well. But I have three families. I have Kehath, and I have Gershon, and I have Merari dealing with their three jobs. I only have two sons, which means I'm going to have to figure out exactly how does that work. So the Torah says, actually, very interestingly, as follows. The Torah says, the sons of Kehath, our first son with the most sanctified vessels, the son of Aaron, who's going to be in charge, is Elazar. He's going to be in charge of Kehath and their job. Gershon, our next of the groupings, who had the next level of sanctity, their actual tent of meeting and the curtains and coverings, the Torah says it's going to be Alpi Aharon Uvanav. The Torah says in a very broad way, it's going to be Aharon and his sons will be in charge. Later it mentions it's going to be Itamar, but the way that it's described is as Aharon and his sons. And then the third son, Merari, that is Itamar, the second son. So that, going over that again, we have the first tribe subdivision of Levi of Kehath was through Elazar. The last one was Merari under Itamar. And the middle group, Gershon, had this broad statement of, it's going to be Aharon and his sons. It happens to be Itamar. But the Torah doesn't say that in the same clear way. It says it's going to be Aharon and his sons. So that's one way of avoiding the issue. You have Elazar one, Itamar the other, and then the middle one is a group effort. Aharon and his sons will be in charge. Okay, somebody has to do it, so it'll be Itamar. Now, this issue is of note. The Maharal asks this question, like, why is it necessary to do it that way, that you have to take this middle son of Gershon, and instead of giving it to one of the two sons of Aharon to be in charge, you sort of set it in this big, broad way, Aharon and his sons are going to be in charge. So also is a fascinating thing. He says as follows. Gershon, what was their role again? What did they take? So they took the tent of meeting, they took the curtains and the coverings, together with the lace hangings on the outer wall. They actually combined the job. They were the middle ground, if you will, between Kehath on the one side and Merari on the other. Because their brother Kehath took all the entities, again, all the entities inside the actual Mishkan. The third brother took all the outer walls, but the middle brother, Gershon, took part of the inside and the lace hangings on the outside. So they did a little bit of what was relevant to one brother and a little bit of what was relevant to the other brother. And they are the golden mean in the middle. Let me just, one more time, just to show what you have here. Let me see if I can, that you can see. The middle brother Gershon did the first brother Kehath took the vessels inside. They took the actual tent. They also took the lace hangings that hung over these walls. So they combined a little bit what was relevant to both brothers. One brother had only the walls. The other brother had only the inner vessels, and they had the covering of the and the lace hanging. So they were the bridge, so to speak, to all of them. As such, says the Maharal, when you're the bridge, so it should be a broad effort. It should be the children of Aharon should be the ones in charge, because in the same way that the role of Gershon, that middle subdivision of Levi, bridged the two other elements of what was done, so it should be a very general sense of Aharon and his sons should be the ones who will do it. Now, the Maharal then says as follows. It needs to be that it's this Aharon and his sons as a bridge who are going to do this. The Maharal says you can, and he couldn't list them explicitly for the following reason. There's a principle called Ma'alin Bakodesh Ve'ein Moridin. We only go up in levels of sanctity and you never go down. That's a basic principle. That's utilized Hanukkah time, for example, why we light starting at number one and then we go to two, three, four. We go in ascending order because Ma'alin Bakodesh Ve'ein Moridin. We go up in levels of sanctity, we never go down. It's why the Mishnah in Maseches Megillah teaches that if you had a piece of wood, for example, that was used in a bench, in a shul, you were allowed to take that piece of wood and then use it to build the bima where the Sefer Torah will rest. And then it's a piece of that wood can be used to build the aron itself, because that's going up in levels of sanctity. But if an aron had to be destroyed for whatever reason, it wasn't usable anymore, you can't take a piece of wood from an aron and then use it to build a bima. And you can't take a piece of wood from the bima and use it to build a bench in the shul, because we have a principle called Ma'alin V'Kodesh V'Ein Moridin. Therefore, says the Maral, Elazar, back to our sheets, Elazar, who's given the most sanctified task of being in charge of Kehos and his family, who had the sacred vessels themselves, the Aron, the Menorah, the Mizbeach, the Shulchan, once Elazar is designated to be in charge of that family, he's at the highest level of sanctity. And you have to start with that level because of its sanctity. So how do I then put Elazar in charge of something less than that? Because we have a rule, Ma'alin Bakodesh. You could only go up in levels of sanctity. So once Elazar was, so to speak, pigeonholed or identified to be in charge of the first family of Kohath, he couldn't be put in charge of something less. Itamar is going to be put in charge of Merari, which is our least sanctified task. Once Itamar is placed there, so that's his role. Why then does it work, this whole system? So the Maral explains like this. If Itamar had been identified as in charge of Gershon, as that's your role, we would have the same problem that once he would have been identified as in charge of Gershon, he then could not be identified as specifically in charge of Merari, because he already would have been given a specific task of a certain level of sanctity. You can't then be given a task of lesser sanctity. So therefore, he's not specifically mentioned as the one in charge. It's Aaron and his sons. That's what the Torah says is going to be in charge. Who's it going to be? What does that mean? Okay, it eventually went to Itamar, but he was not identified as the person in charge. He's only then later identified as someone who's going to do it, but he's identified in the third. Here's the idea I want to share with you. What difference does it make that he wasn't formally identified? Meaning, at the end of the day, he did it. That was his task. But the Torah described it in a broad sense of Aaron and his sons are going to do this middle one. Eventually, it fell to him. But he was identified as in charge of Merari, Elazar's in charge of Kohath. Maral explains as follows. There is a fundamental difference between a person who's given a task with their name on it and a general task that's given up that someone steps up to do. When you have a task and you're identified, you, Plony, so-and-so, this is your job. It's my job. When it becomes your job, it becomes of significance, becomes of importance. It has your name on it. You are achrai. You are responsible for this to happen. When there's a job that needs to be done, and it was not given to you particularly, it was a job that needs to be done, and you look around, and no one's doing it, and you say, all right, listen, someone's got to do it. I'll take care of it. When you take care of it, but it's not yours, it was never identified to anybody else as yours, and even in your own mind, it's not. It's just somebody needs to do it. I'll do it. You don't put your kishkas into it. You don't put your heart and soul into it. It's not yours. It's just something that needs to be done. We treat the way we relate to something when it is identifiably ours totally different. It's something that I need to do. I have to do. It's my task. It's my mission. Therefore, the Maral says, the fact that Itamar had the middle role doesn't bother us on the role of Ma'alin Bakodesh of only going up, because it wasn't identified in his. It was just Aaron and his sons as the bridge. They need to cover this. Okay, Itamar is the one who ended up doing it, but it never was identified as yours. Only when something's identified as yours does it really become yours, to the extent where then I can't be given something lower, I can only be given something higher. And that idea that we relate differently, fundamentally differently, to something that is ours, where it's defined as ours, it has our name on it, is an amazing tool for us to be aware of the way that we relate to that kind of work. I want to quickly share with you one other place in the parasha where this happens, and tie this idea together, because it's literally the same idea comes up, a magnificent idea. Literally the pasuk that we read. I'm going to share it again, so you'll see the pasuk in front of you. Okay, the very beginning, that same chapter that we read, the pasuk said where the wagons were donated, that began, it's on the bottom of your screen, right there, very bottom of your screen, verse 1 in chapter 7. Vayihi b'yom kalos Moshe lo kimes ha-mishkan. It was on the day that Moshe completed or finished setting up the Mishkan, and they sanctified it, they anointed it, they were ready to go, and that's when the tribal leaders came forward. Rashi is very troubled, quoting from the sages. The phrase b'yom kalos Moshe, on the day that Moshe completed its construction, is a very strange usage of words, because who actually constructed the Mishkan? So we know the Torah says many times, it was not Moshe who constructed the Mishkan. It was Bezalel and all the Chacham Lev, Aholiyah. The Torah tells us many times who did it. And yet the Torah here says it was on the day that Moshe finished. The day that Moshe finished, you're taking away the credit from everybody else who was responsible for doing it, putting it on Moshe. It wasn't Moshe who did it. Rashi says as follows. You'll tell me if you actually can see this in front of you. I'm putting it on the screen. It's on the right-hand side. I'll read it to you. If you don't have it in front of you, that's totally fine. Rashi asks, but it was Bezalel and Aholiyah and all the wise-hearted men who made it. Yet the Torah attributes it to Moshe because he, the language of Rashi is, Masar Nafsho Alav. Moshe devoted himself wholeheartedly. Liros Tavnis Kol Dovar V'Dovar Kimoshe Hareu Behar. Moshe made sure that everything was done exactly as it had been shown to him by Hashem on the mountain. He made sure that the workmen did every single thing. There was no errors. Moshe was the one who said, I got to make sure that it's right. So yes, there were others who did it. But at the end of the day, who was responsible? At the end of the day, Moshe felt responsible. Moshe was Moser Nefesh. And therefore, who is it called on? It was called that it was Moshe's work, because he felt the responsibility that it was done. I'll give you a simple example that probably doesn't apply, or maybe one time applied to probably all of us at some point or another. If you have a second grader or a fourth grader, probably a good example is a sixth grader who has a book report to do, and the child comes, and the child shows the parent their work the night before it's due, and the parent says, "This is terrible." And the child says, whatever, I don't care. And then the parent starts taking out a pen and editing and retyping and doing everything together. And at the end of the day, hand it in. Whose work is it? Who at the end of the day felt responsible for the way? The child learns very quickly, like, it doesn't really matter what I do, because like mom or dad are going to fix this up and make it work. That's mom or dad's report. That's not the kid's report. Only if the kid feels that when they hand it, the buck stops with them, does it actually become theirs. That's a silly little example, but it applies in all of our, whatever volunteer work that we do in a shul, in a community organization. Sometimes we all know that there's a person in charge who's a micromanager. And we all know how we relate to the micromanager. We say, great, why should I put in all this effort? Anyway, this person is gonna, you know, take it over and do everything, so I don't have to worry about it. And that's exactly what always ends up happening. And then the person in charge does it. When they, whoever is responsible, is Moser Nefesh, puts forth everything, and it's theirs. It's actually theirs. To delegate means to say, this is your project. It's yours. You are responsible, and the way that it's going to come out is going to be your. When we feel that that's the way it's going to work, then we put our heart and soul, we put our stamp on it, because I'm actually the one who's responsible at the end of the day. As long as I know someone else is responsible, I will hand in less than perfect work, because I know it's someone else's problem. It's someone else's responsibility. They only asked me to do the legwork. They're going to make it theirs. That's how it goes. Moshe is given credit for erecting the Mishkan because he dedicated himself to make sure it was right. And I thought it was astounding, just in the same parsha we find this idea twice. Here by Moshe, and literally that's what the Maral explains. That's why when the middle family of Levi, of Gershon, who's going to be in charge, which son of Aaron, the Torah just says, the sons of Aaron will be in charge. It was going to be Itamar, but it's just said broadly. Why? Because it couldn't be Itamar who was given it, because then he couldn't be given the last one, which is of a lower level of sanctity. So, okay, he did it. But why then isn't there the same problem of the lower level of sanctity if he ended up doing it anyway? Because it was never his. It was abroad. The sons of Aaron are going to be in charge. Okay, he eventually is the one who did it. But if it's not identified, called on your name, this is your job, I never relate to it in the same way. Because it's not, it doesn't have my name affiliated. When you are in charge, then it's mine. And I'll do it in a certain way. We find that idea in both those instances, which is really nice how they come together. And it's relevant in all of our lives in so many ways. That which we feel responsible for, it has our name. It has our affiliation on it, and we therefore take that responsibility in a much more different level than other things. And it's a lesson in how to delegate, and a lesson in how to make things ours and treat it in that way. And that's what we find. Bayom Kalos Moshe Lo Hakimus HaMishkan. It's treated as Moshe's Mishkan because he dedicated himself to make sure it was his responsibility. And the person who at the end of the day feels responsible, that's where the buck stops, and that's whose name will eventually go on the entirety of the project. In the same way, if it fails, if something goes wrong, they have to step up and take the responsibility. They get the responsibility for the credit. It's that person who feels that responsibility. That's whose name goes on it. Those are some thoughts on Parshas Naso. Pleasure always learning with you. Look forward to continuing again next week. And I wish you all an amazing day.